NetCredit is here to say yes to a personal loan or line of credit when other lenders say no. Apply in minutes and get a decision as soon as the same day. Loans offered by NetCredit or lending partner banks and serviced by NetCredit. Application subject to review and approval. Learn more at netcredit.com/partner. NetCredit, credit to the people.
This is a big year. The Ohio Lottery's golden anniversary. 50 years of excitement, of growing jackpots and crossed fingers. 50 years of funding for schools, of changed lives and brightened days. 50 years of fun, and that is worth celebrating. So watch for can't-miss promotions, huge events, and new games that will make the Ohio Lottery's 50th year its biggest one yet. Learn more at funturns50.com.
If a friend asks how you're doing, and you say,
I'm okay.
When the truth is,
I don't want my problems to burden anyone.
Or you say,
hang in there.
Because
if I ask for help, they'll just think I'm weak.
Then this is your sign to call, text, or chat. 988 for free, confidential support. Anytime. You don't have to hide how you feel.
MSW Media.
Hey, it's Kimberly, host of the Start Me Up podcast. If you like your politics with some loose talk and salty language, you're going to love my show. I interview the coolest people like Mary Trump, Kathy Griffin, and DNC Chair Jamie Harrison. The Start Me Up podcast has an easygoing, casual style and a strong emphasis on left-leaning politics. We also have frank discussions about sex and more than a few spirited rants. Just visit patreon.com/startmeup or wherever you get your podcasts and start listening today.
The rule of law is not just some lawyer's turn of phrase. It is the very foundation of our democracy. The essence of the rule of law is that like cases are treated alike. That there not be one rule for Democrats and another for Republicans. One rule for the powerful, another for the powerless, one rule for the rich, and another for the poor, or different rules depending upon one's race or ethnicity. To serve as Attorney General at this critical time is a calling I am honored and eager to answer.
So yeah, now it's clean up on aisle 45 time. And for a long while yet, it is going to be clean up on aisle 45.
Hello and welcome to episode 104 of Clean Up on Aisle 45. It is Wednesday, January 18th, 2 days before my birthday. I'm Allison Gill, and I am joined, you know what I'd love for my birthday, Andrew? I'm joined by my friend, real life lawyer, real life person, real life human being, real life guy who cares about stuff. Andrew Torres, how are you?
I am not a cat.
I am not a cat.
I'm sad we've moved on, and the days of cat lawyer appearing in court over Zoom have mostly evaporated. So, what would you most like for your birthday, Allison?
I would like indictments. For
there you go.
At least like Walt Nauta, or maybe a cooperation agreement. You know, when we like a week or two ago, when I think it was Zoe Tillman in Bloomberg said that one of her sources told her that Jack Smith is getting ready to make some serious charging decisions, critical charging decisions, and it could be within weeks. I was hoping it would be on my birthday. So we'll see.
I would love to see that. That would make your birthday. I mean, again, it's already January 20th, but it would make that a national holiday, I think, if all of a sudden that coincided with the beginning of the end for Trump. Does that mean we would not have to talk about Donald Trump and the gross things that he does and says? Because I feel like that's where we're headed to today.
Yeah. I mean, that. I have to laugh. That's like, it's getting to the point where that's all I can do.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that's exactly right. You have much in common. So big news that broke late last week. Judge Kaplan in the consolidated E. Jean Carroll libel and sexual assault cases against the former president, Donald Trump. Let me take a sidebar here and give a content warning that, you know, we're going to try and handle this as sensitively as possible. We're going to be talking about E. Jean Carroll, who alleges that Donald Trump sexually assaulted her. And if that's not a subject you want to hear about, we totally understand. If it's a subject you need a little bit of time on, we totally understand. So with that in mind, on January 13th, Judge Kaplan decided, made a couple of rulings of consequence. I think the primary one that we're going to talk about today is the order unsealing a portion of various depositions that were conducted of both the plaintiff, E. Jean Carroll, and of the defendant, Donald Trump, and that were attached as exhibits to the party's proposed case management plan, right, to mm-hmm. sort of illustrate what kind of discovery was necessary. And the one that people are focused on, and rightly so, is Exhibit B, which contains portions of both Carroll's and Trump's depositions. So with that kind of setup, your thoughts, Allison?
Well, I was following along with these released depositions, looking, not only reading them for myself and trying to sort of absorb what Trump said could mean for him legally, but also what some lawyers were pointing out on social media, like is Lisa Rubin, is that her name?
Uh-huh.
And that's the Law of Ruby on Twitter. And also at some of the things Joyce Vance was saying and some of the other, you know, some just the attorneys that I follow in general. And I was personally, just through reading it myself, very shocked at some of the things he admitted to. He appears to have admitted to assaulting E. Jean Carroll. He appears to have said that the reason, or like inferred that the reason it was okay to do that is because of a misinterpreted interview she gave to Anderson Cooper. I mean, there's a lot in there that goes toward the defamation, and not to forget the fact that he said when, and this is what really stuck out in my head, because remember when his whole defense and the whole reason the DOJ is even considering representing him or being, you know, certified to represent him in this case is because he said he made these remarks during the course of his job, during the course of yep. his duty as president, because he was answering a question from the press, which is the job of the president. A lot of people have some disagreements on whether or not that should be the way that it is. But that was the defense. But then he made the exact same defaming statements on Truth Social a few months ago, way after he was no longer the president, couldn't have been part of his job. And when Robbie Kaplan, great lawyer, by the way, incredible.
Oh, yeah.
at deposing people, asked, was that you? Yes. Did anyone help you write that? Nope, that was all me. Did you? That's what you said on that. Yes, that was no one helped me write it. That was me. He's cornered now.
I love everything you've said so far, and I want to kind of give you my thoughts and the background of the law, and, you know, sort of merge that all in. The overwhelming thing I felt as a lawyer, the overwhelming thing I thought in reading this was just disgust at Donald Trump as a human being. On a level that is independent of my distaste for him politically, we've had plenty of scumbags in the Democratic Party, and if this were someone I agreed with 100% politically, I would be embarrassed on that. I don't think that's going to change any Trumpers anything, but wow, what a gross human. Leaving that aside, I kind of went back into deposition mode. So I loved you pointing out Roberta Kaplan, the very best in the country at what she does, right, is in bringing these sorts of lawsuits. And as I'm reading this transcript, you immediately get a feel for what an unbelievably difficult witness Donald Trump is to depose. Yeah. So independent, right? I've had a large number of depositions, and I've had challenging depositions. I've had depositions, you know, in which the parties are, you know, coached within an inch of their lives to like not deviate from a particular script. And one of the great things about being pedantic and slow and boring like I am in depositions is eventually you can get them off their script. And once you get them off their script, then those depositions become, you know, case winners for you. It is really, really difficult to depose somebody who just asserts things that are crazy, right? Like that just as you go through, you can't ask the kind of basic questions that are meant to lay a foundation because they're just going to say anything, right? So I'm not sure why this is highlighted. This is the very, very, this is the first page. It's page 125 of the deposition. It's the first page that's excerpted in Exhibit B.
Who highlighted it?
It actually is highlighted in the shared court listener, which it doesn't matter. But my point is that this is an excerpt that was pulled out because this was attached as Exhibit B to the party's joint case management plan, right?
Okay. Okay. Got
yeah.
It.
Yeah. So one, either E. Jean Carroll or Donald Trump thought that that this was relevant, and just as you listen, I mean, just imagine trying to be Roberta Kaplan in this, right?
Yeah.
So she's walking through the stuff that Donald Trump has said, and this should be a very easy moment, right? Roberta Kaplan, question. I want to focus on the very last sentence of this nonsense that you've written, which says, now, like everyone else, she, meaning E. Jean Carroll, gets paid by a radical left-leaning publisher to say bad and untrue things. Answer, yeah. Question, do you know who her publisher was? Answer, no, I just heard it was a publisher that did some very bad books on us. Question, I'll represent to you that her publisher was HarperCollins. Answer, yeah, and they haven't been great. Question, do you know who published your son-in-law Jared Kushner's book? Answer, well, it could be, but they've also published some very bad ones too. And then she just sort of gives up, right? Like, and rightfully so, because look, a human being would have said, okay, yep. It's HarperCollins. HarperCollins published Jared Kushner's book. You know, make of that what you will, right? Like a normal human being, you've kind of got them cornered there. Donald Trump is just like, there's no purpose in continuing down that line of analysis. And I think most lawyers would not have the wherewithal to say, to know when to punt on that, right? Like that's the hardest thing to do because you feel like, okay, well now this asshole feels like he's gotten something over on me, right? Like mm-hmm. I was going to get him to admit that's a stupid thing. And now he doesn't have to, right? He's just, it could be, but they published some bad ones too. Fine. Forget you. We're moving on. So, and I'll continue to give examples, kind of over the course of the show, of just how obstructionist and how difficult it is. And so, you then highlighted pivoting amazingly to Truth Social and sort of playing to Trump's ego, the unbelievable crystal clear admissions that Roberta Kaplan is able to get from Donald Trump by essentially, you know, taunting him, right? Like and that statement you posted, who wrote that statement? I did. You yourself? Yeah. Did you post the statement yourself? Yes. Like, and I mean, just the kind of like, no, come on. Now we both know you're not smart enough to have written that, right? Like, and he's like, I 100% did. I wrote it, and it's just brilliant. Now,
yeah, right. That's how you get him. That's how you threaten him with like you're dumb and couldn't have possibly done this by yourself.
I would be terrible at deposing Donald Trump. It would just it wouldn't work at all. And so I tip my cap to Roberta Kaplan. You then also hit on the significance of this Truth Social statement, which is this is not simply a republication or a reaffirmation of the statements that Donald Trump made while he was in the White House in response to an interview question. These are independent and new statements that have the same legal effect. In other words, this is a brand new act of defamation while not in the White House because Donald Trump can't help himself and because he's used to facing no consequences for his entire miserable life. And so that gets you around the question that is still being litigated, which is, as our friend Liz Dye puts it, whether Donald Trump was acting within the scope of his employment when he said that E. Jean Carroll was too ugly for him to have raped. When you put it that way, it's sort of obvious where you want the listener to come out. But I want to tell you that question, right? We've covered this on this show. We've covered it on Opening Arguments. The question about what covers the scope of job duties as the president is something that really hasn't been litigated very much. And in the operative case law in the D.C. Circuit, right? We've talked about the Council on American Islamic Relations case regarding a congressman who, you know, was asked in an interview and then sort of went into a lengthy, anti-Islamic tirade.
But that's why I loved some of the questions that the judges were asking en banc, that, you know, they seem to really want to get to the bottom of litigating what is considered a private comment and what is considered part of your duties as president. And I really appreciate that.
Yeah, I do too, because it's not clear, right? And you know, and you and I talked about this, I think, because...
Well, we talked about it because as the law stands, to interrupt you, but as...
Yeah, no.
For current precedent, as it stands, it's not outside of the realm. It's actually well within the realm for the Department of Justice and for Donald Trump's side to argue that he said these things within the scope of his employment. And now that it's being challenged by, I think, what I consider to be excellent lawyers and excellent attorneys. And also, I kind of noticed that the Department of Justice wasn't arguing real hard. It feels like, I mean, they were arguing the point because, first of all, this assertion was made by Bill Barr's Department of Justice, mm-hmm. and it's carried over now into this Department of Justice. And everything that happened in Bill Barr's Department of Justice, we've seen this. This Department of Justice will carry that flag, but nothing else. They'll carry that flag, the facts that Bill Barr's DOJ put forward, but they won't add anything to it. We saw it in the memo for the Bill Barr 2019 memo to discuss, but, you know, deliberative processes for why Donald Trump didn't obstruct justice. And this DOJ could have made a very simple, very easy argument that I'm sure they knew they could make that they did not make. They simply made Bill Barr DOJ old argument and ended up losing and not appealing. And I don't think that this is necessarily on purpose, other than they sat down and said, look, we got to preserve the institution. We're not going to give ourselves a black eye. We're not going to punch the DOJ in the face, no matter who was corruptly in charge of it or corruptly running it. But what we will do is we'll take their shit ass argument and run with it. And we aren't going to add anything better to it. And that will show we are preserving, the DOJ and what they stood for, even though we think that they're probably wrong. But, you know, we're not going to go out of our way to fight for this shit. That's the way I see it, but I could be totally wrong, and that might be complete bullshit, but that's what it feels like, because I'm listening to the lawyers for DOJ argue here, and I'm like, really? That's your...
Doesn't feel like your heart's in it? I think that read is... I think that's a very plausible read of the situation, and I just want to layer something on top of it, which is our broken legislature, right, which has the filibuster in the Senate and is going to be more broken over the next 2 years with the Republican Congress, makes it imperative to strengthen the powers of the executive as much as possible, right, from the perspective of the executive, right? From Joe Biden, who is going to be reelected or not on the basis of voters asking the question, has he gotten enough stuff done? Mm-hmm. So not only do you have that kind of overall political tendency, but you have the fact that you're the current president. And so, you know, so add together those two things. I think you're, like I said, correct in describing the sort of moral dilemma going on. But I will tell you in general, right, it's part of why these OLC memoranda on how you can't prosecute a sitting president. Well, they're all written by people who serve a sitting president, right? Like there's a tremendous amount of self-interest that goes on. And we should not hesitate to identify that self-interest when, you know, when it's our guy as opposed to the former guy. But I think that it is fair to say that the Biden position corporately, right, across every executive department that we've seen since the start of the administration has been one of not of being willing to take stances that are compatible with a reduction in power of the executive branch. And that's incredibly noteworthy, right? So yeah. I'm glad you point that out. So you flagged it. Yeah. I mean, unless you want to do sort of a little bit more on that.
I was going to say, yeah. And now I want to know, I'm interested in your thoughts on, but first of all, if you could just give a little bit of background on the multiple lawsuits that have been consolidated here, because I think there could be a little confusion. At least there was for me. The original defamation suit is in here. Is there a new defamation suit based on what was posted on Truth Social? And it has the November 24th lawsuit pursuant to the new New York law about assault victims, is that also been filed and is now consolidated in this lawsuit? What are we looking at that's part of what is being argued on Bonk here?
Yeah, absolutely correct. So let's break that down. The first lawsuit, which is now being described in the pleadings as Carol One, right? And this is kind of classic lawyerisms. You know, you just stick Roman numerals on the end of it when you have multiple parallel pleadings. Was filed in state court in New York, and then Donald Trump removed that to federal court, right? So for all of you will hear Donald Trump complain about Judge Lewis Kaplan because his incompetent attorneys over at Alina Haba's workshop for the intellectually underfed are tripping over themselves with their own stupidity here. This is the forum Donald Trump chose, right? Roberta Kaplan filed the suit in state court. Donald Trump removed it to federal court on the basis of he lives in Florida now, right? That Carol One lawsuit has as the gravamen of its allegations only a claim of libel about Donald Trump's statements in June of 2019 while he was president. Okay. It obviously could not include a claim based on the underlying rape itself because, as everyone agrees, such a claim would almost certainly have been time barred at the time that the case was filed. But then the law changed. And so in 2022, right, just last year, New York enacted the Adult Survivors Act. And the Adult Survivors Act, people who were allegedly sexually abused as adults were given a new 1-year time period to sue their alleged abusers, right? So waives that statute of limitations. And then E. Jean Carroll filed a new lawsuit. Trump's lawyers, Alina Haba sort of played this. Well, we don't know who's going to represent Donald Trump in that suit. And Judge Kaplan was like, well, it's going to get consolidated into this one. So you better figure it out, Ms. Haba. And then they, you know, very quickly were like, it's going to be us because no one else will represent this person anymore. So she brought Carol, what's called Carol 2, to recover damages. And that Carol 2 suit has two counts of action, right?
So Carol 1 is the original defamation. Carol 2 is under the Adult Survivors Act.
It's both. It is the claim for the alleged rape under the Adult Survivors Act and for additional libelous statements made by Donald Trump on Truth Social on October 12th, 2022.
Okay, so we have two suits. One of them is one thing. One of them is a consolidation of the other thing. And all three are now consolidated into one.
That's exactly right. And the reason for that is because they are operative, that there is the same common nucleus of operative law and facts. As the court put it, the central issue in both Carroll 1 and Carroll 2 is exactly the same, whether Mr. Trump raped Ms. Carroll. If he did not, then Ms. Carroll's sexual assault claim in Carroll 2 and her libel claims in both cases likely would fail. If he did, then little would remain in either case except possibly a few minor issues related to Mr. Trump's statements and determination of damages. So it makes complete sense to consolidate the cases as they have now been consolidated.
Yeah, and you and I talked about the fact that they would probably end up being consolidated, and for that very reason, for exactly why you just explained how cases become consolidated in the first place. So, yeah.
Yep. And then we're not going to talk about it because it's a separate legal document, would require going through it, but that Trump moved to dismiss the consolidated complaint. He argues that the Adult Survivors Act violates the Due Process Clause of the New York State Constitution. It does not. And he argued that the libel claim is legally insufficient because E. Jean Carroll failed to allege special damages under New York law. And I will just tell you that Judge Kaplan, no relation, no conflict of interest, said, both of these arguments are, quote, without merit, end quote. So we're not going to talk about that. But
I love the succinct nature of that. You know, when you and I talk about some of the great judge responses, that this one's kind of up there. No merit. You have no merit.
Yeah, this is a get out. And look, the due process. I don't want to get too far down the rabbit trail here. I'm about to make fun of Alina Haba and her little Muppet sidekick, right? It's Haba Madayo, and they're both in this deposition. And they're like, it is Tweedledum and Tweedledumber, as far as I can tell. So I want to say, so they're idiots and they're bad at the law.
Yeah,
and we should make fun of them.
Some of those Haba arguments, by the way, in the en banc hearing were just absolutely like, wow. Did you say that? Did those words come out of your mouth to judges in the D.C. Circuit Court of Appeals? That's amazing.
It's an insult to my profession that she and I have the same job title. So I want to say, bracketing that the argument that the Adult Survivors Act violates due process has some intuitive appeal, right? The idea is when you have a statute of limitations that gives you certainty once you are now outside of that period of limitations upon which you can rely, right? And so particularly in the commercial context, that's in which I'm familiar with these things, right? Like once you've gone X number of years past a certain date, then you can tell your client if they're on either side, right? If they have received a threatening, I'm going to sue you about this if you don't do this, and then you don't, right? Well, you know, if it's a 2-year statute or a 3-year statute, whatever, once that time has elapsed, you know that I'm going to sue you threat is no longer valid, right? Or on the flip side, if you're the one who's made allegations and they haven't done anything to make it better for you over the 3-year period, that's the time when as a business, you can sort of write that off. So intuitively, the idea you can go back and retroactively change the rules, I get why you would want to say that it is a due process violation. We're talking about sexual assault. And so there's a very, very compelling public interest. And on the other hand, like the reliance interest, we're not really talking about like, you know, you have to maintain tax records or whatever, right? So I guess I just want to say that was not a bottom of the barrel argument. It was still wrong. But, you know, in terms of the things that we're going to make fun of Alina Haba and Bruce Madayo. I don't even know what Madayo's first name is. It's astonishing to me how bad they are. Like, there are multiple times in this deposition, in the selected transcript. So we don't have the full deposition transcripts, right? We just have the excerpts that were attached to the particular order in Exhibit
And why B. is that? Why did we not get the entire deposition?
So that's a really, really, that's an excellent question. The parties have a confidentiality order in place. And that confidentiality order in place is that the depositions would be sealed, would be confidential. Again, this is the kind of thing that I am familiar with in business, commercial practice all the time. But typically, you know, the rules are that anything that you do in a proceeding, right, is open to the public, right? The public has sunshine laws, right? We have an interest in observing the judicial process. Depositions are not usually filed on the court docket, right? Those are conducted by and between the parties with no intervention by the courts. It's the parties, their lawyers in a courtroom. Here it was over Zoom, and that's becoming more and more of a standard practice kind of post-COVID. I'm still a big fan of actually getting together in the room, but, you know, it is what it is. And you have a court reporter and a transcript is generated, but that is not made, that's not filed the way your motions are filed, right? It's not made a part of the docket. And so in federal court, right, that means it's not available on PACER. Then portions of that were attached to the party's joint case management order. And the question became, should those exhibits be presumptively sealed or should they be unsealed, right? And that was actually the subject of another pleading, right? And Judge Kaplan ordered that portion unsealed because the only argument that was really made was Trump argued that he relied upon the confidentiality of his testimony because there was a protective order presumptively sealing all of discovery. And then the court said, yeah, but that order itself put you on notice. It said, notwithstanding the designation of material as confidential in discovery, there is no presumption that such confidential discovery material will be filed under seal. The fact that information is subject to a confidentiality agreement between litigants is not, by itself, a valid basis to overcome the presumption of access to judicial documents. So, long-winded way of saying, Trump thought everything was going to be sealed and no one was going to see what a weasel he is. But the moment that you attach something to a pleading, the public has a presumptive right to access that and to see what it is that you've said in connection with that argument.
Okay, so that's one of those things where you opened the door here.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Now, again, look, layer my familiarity with it. Suppose this was, and I don't know why all lawyers use the, like, 11 secret herbs and spices for Kentucky Fried Chicken as our, like, go-to example of business trade secrets. But we always do. It's weird. But yeah, if I'm representing KFC and we discuss the 11 herbs and spices in the deposition, then I can have that line of the transcript, right? I can say, oh, we're about to discuss highly protected confidential business trade secrets, and I want this part redacted and off the record, right? And then, right, you would not be in the position of Trump, who just said, well, everything was supposed to be confidential, so I don't understand why you're unsealing it, right? Well, that's not good enough. But saying, hey, this is a protected business secret that we keep under lock and key, I'm not going to have any rando view it on the internet, is a good argument.
He's real big on the blanket stuff, like when he talks about exactly.
NetCredit is here to say yes to a personal loan or line of credit when other lenders say no. Apply in minutes and get a decision as soon as the same day. If approved, applications are typically funded the next business day or sooner. Loans offered by NetCredit or lending partner banks and serviced by NetCredit. Application subject to review and approval. Learn more at netcredit.com/partner. NetCredit. Credit to the people. When you say yes.
This is a big year. The Ohio Lottery's golden anniversary. 50 years of excitement, of growing jackpots and crossed fingers. 50 years of funding for schools, of changed lives and brightened days. 50 years of fun. And that is worth celebrating. So watch for can't-miss promotions, huge events, and new games that will make the Ohio Lottery's 50th year its biggest one yet. Learn more at funturns50.com.
If a friend asks how you're doing, and you say,
I'm okay.
When the truth is,
I don't want my problems to burden anyone.
Or you say,
hang it in there.
Because
if I ask for help, they'll just think I'm weak.
Then this is your sign to call, text, or chat. 988 for free, confidential support. Anytime. You don't have to hide how you feel.
This podcast is sponsored by Monarch Money. Are you saving to reach your financial goals? Reaching those goals isn't just about getting more money, but by managing what you have. And the best way to manage your money? Monarch Money. Monarch Money is a new kind of finance app that's intuitive, powerful, ad-free, and takes the headaches out of budgeting. Try it free when you go to monarchmoney.com/podcast. Monarch puts all your accounts, investments, transactions, and finances at your fingertips. With a complete view of your finances, you'll gain insights on your spending and find new ways to save. Plus, Monarch lets you customize your dashboard, collaborate with your partner, set custom budgets and goals, and track your progress toward them. See why Mint users are turning to Monarch Money and loving it, and why the Wall Street Journal named Monarch Money the best budgeting app overall. Get a 30-day free trial when you go to monarchmoney.com/podcast. That's monarchmoney.com/podcast for your free trial. monarchmoney.com/podcast.
Executive privilege. He just wants to be, it's all executive privilege. No, you really actually have to argue that on a case-by-case basis. He seems to like the blanket immunity, blanket leave me alone, blanket stuff. And sometimes the blanket doesn't cover you. I want to ask another question too, and you were going to finish making a point before I interrupted you about that thing, but we do have to take a quick break. So why don't we do that really quick, and then we'll come back and finish the road you were headed down before I jumped in with my question, and then I have another question for you. Everybody stick around, we'll be right back.
I'm Greg Oliar. 4 years ago, I stopped writing novels to report on the crimes of Donald Trump and his associates. In 2018, I wrote a best-selling book about it, Dirty Rubles. In 2019, I launched Prevail, a biweekly column about Trump and Putin, spies and mobsters, and so many traitors! Trump may be gone, but the damage he wrought will take years to fully understand. Join me and a revolving crew of contributors and guests as we try to make sense of it all. This is Prevail.
All right, everybody, welcome back. Andrew, what road were you headed down before I waylaid you?
I was just going to talk about how terrible Alina Haba and Muppet Madayo are as lawyers. And here is the example that just any lawyer reading this burst out laughing. So there's a line of questioning by Roberta Kaplan. This is page 154 of the Trump transcript. It's very near the bottom of the Exhibit B that was made public. And Roberta Kaplan is asking about the edited video that was also uploaded to Truth Social. And so the questions are, question, so you don't deny that you posted that video on Truth Social as well?
Answer, no, not at all. Video are you talking about?
I have not seen this video, but from the description from the questions, right, it looks like it's a hit piece on E. Jean Carroll that's put into video format. There are bar graphs on there. I don't know. I can't find what it is. I'm not on Truth Social. I did go look for it, but video that is potentially relevant to the defamation claims. Okay. And the question is, so you don't deny you posted that on Truth Social? No, not at all. And whose idea was it to? And Trump interrupts, is mine. Create that video, yours. Okay, who was involved in the creation of that video? And then Muppet Madayo says, objection. And Trump says, it's done in-house. And Roberta Kaplan looks at Medaio and says, "What's your objection, sir?" And he says, "It's an objection based on relevance." And Roberta Kaplan, the very best understated line in the entire deposition, says that there's no relevance objections at depositions.
Oh.
And it's true. You cannot object on the basis of relevance during a deposition. Okay, mm-hmm. You can object as to the form of the question, right? If I ask you a compound question or a leading question or something where it's not clear what a yes might be, so you always didn't never say that, right? Like, you can object to that
or
and
asked
preserve
and
that
answered.
For the record, right?
You can object for asked and answered.
That's a form of a form objection, right?
Yeah.
You can object and instruct the witness not to answer if it would reveal attorney-client or other privilege. And if the witness is there in a corporate capacity, right, you can object to things as being beyond the scope of the deposition, right? Hey, this person was brought here to talk about accounting matters. You're asking about marketing. That's not his job. He's not prepared. He doesn't bind the company when it comes to marketing, so don't ask about that, right? But in a general deposition, you can't object to relevance because depositions are supposed to be a fishing expedition, right? Like, that's why we do them. And the idea that you would say that is just reveals somebody who isn't smart, who doesn't know the law, who does just... So there's no relevance objections at deposition.
No, what you can't see Andrew's face right now, everyone, but it's bright red.
There are veins everywhere. I'm about to Hulk out because...
Flames on the sides of my face, heaving breaths. Yeah, that's...
This is
that's
a like,
Andrew.
Well, we should have a discussion about bird law sometime kind of objection, right? Like, and so then Muppet Medaio comes back with, well, to the form of the question. And then, which is just, okay, you're right, I'm a moron. And then Roberta Kaplan comes back and is like, who was involved in creating that video? So I just had to share that little demonstration.
Nugget.
Because when I tell you these lawyers suck, like, sometimes I don't think it comes out clearly enough just how badly these lawyers suck. So now you had a real law question thing.
I do. A real law question thing. That was real law. It's great to know, that's very important that you can't object to relevance in a deposition. And it makes me want to go read the rules of deposition. So let's talk about the big question on it that I keep getting over and over again. How is Trump allowed to not supply a DNA sample? Are we not there yet, I guess?
Yeah, so we're not there yet because this is preliminary. So this is, the case has survived a motion to dismiss. The briefing schedule that led to the attachment of this Exhibit B is in connection with setting the deadlines for conducting discovery, right? For doing additional depositions, for seeking additional documents. Because again, now, right? Carroll 1 was focused only on the 2019 statement. And so all of the things, all of the discovery that was collected in connection with that case would have been limited in time only to things that are relevant to that 2019 statement. And you could reasonably argue, certainly there's a core aspect of the facts that were alleged with respect to the assault back in the 1990s. But you wouldn't have been able to ask for a lot of evidence directly related to that because, Trump would argue that the burden of that production, plus that the any potential relevance from that production, that's an area where you can make a relevance objection. You can say that the burden of production and the lack of potential admissibility of that evidence weighs strongly in favor of not requiring me to go back and produce it. But now,
does it?
For a 2019, so this is a lot to unpack, right? You heard Judge Kaplan say the core issue in both cases is, you know, did Trump rape Carol? If I were defending Donald Trump, and God help me, I never will, but if I were Trump's lawyer, my argument in Carol 1, right, before the Adult Survivors Act, would be that the question of whether the underlying statement is true or not is an affirmative defense to be raised by my client, right? And I get to decide whether to put that in evidence or not, not you get to decide whether to put that in evidence or not, right?
Okay.
In other words, that I could always concede to, if I decline to produce it, I could say we concede to the statement's falsity, right, for purposes of adjudicating this litigation. Right. And presumably that's what you would want to do. Right. You would want to say, hey, the only reason you would have for inquiring about the assault is to establish the element of defamation that says it's a false statement. Right. That and what we're going to say is for purpose of this litigation, we will concede that the statements that he made were false insofar as they related to denying having sexually assaulted Ms. Carroll.
But that doesn't come up in the other case. That doesn't
If they concede to that, right, they are now conceding to count one under the Adult Survivors Act.
Exactly.
Right? So now they can't just stipulate that for the record. That's an important legal change. So I'm really, really glad you asked the question. Let me go back and pick up two threads. You were asking about the DNA sample, and I will tell you that that question really then borders on, right? Like the primary argument against being compelled to give a DNA sample, even in a civil context, is Fifth Amendment, you know, right against self-incrimination. And the question is that being compelled to give testimony? And I can tell you, I have never litigated that particular question, but it's not 100-0, right? It's not.
And we're talking in a civil case.
Yeah, yeah. It's not conclusively decided sort of either way. So
you can plead the Fifth against your spunk.
Yeah, you absolutely can. You can say, right, because think about it. Remember, you can plead the Fifth in a civil context.
You get a negative inference, possibly.
Sometimes they can draw an adverse inference from that. But I think Trump would rather have an adverse inference drawn against him than
DNA
provide
evidence,
his DNA evidence. And you can infer adversely whatever you want from this podcast on the basis of that. So, but that issue will be litigated, right? Because the E. Jean Carroll's lawyer, Roberta Kaplan, will ask for that. And Trump will fight that until the ends of the earth, obviously.
The
very last thread that I want to make sure that we hit, and maybe you were going to ask it again. You flagged this back in the introduction, and I remembered it, but we've taken a long and winding road here. It is crucial, and this has been reported in other news outlets, but I think it is crucial to emphasize how much Donald Trump lies in connection with the Anderson Cooper interview that E. Jean Carroll did. And he describes that, okay? And again, I cannot overemphasize. I hadn't seen the original Anderson Cooper interview. So I went and pulled up the transcript. And in fact, I think I'm going to start with the transcript because it shows you just what a complete liar under oath Donald Trump is. So here's this interview. This is just after E. Jean Carroll has described the assault that occurred to her And Anderson Cooper says, "You don't use the word rape." And E. Jean Carroll says, "Sexual violence is in every country, in every strata of society. And I just feel that so many women are undergoing sexual violence. Mine was short. I got out. I'm happy now. I'm moving on. And I think of all the women who were enduring constant sexual violence. So this one incident, this one, what, 3 minutes in this little dressing room, I just say it's a fight. That way I'm not the victim, right? I'm not the victim. Cooper, you don't feel like a victim. Eugene Carroll, I was not thrown on the ground and ravished, which the word rape carries so many sexual connotations. That's just, this was not sexual. It just hurt. Cooper says, I think most people think of rape as it's a violent assault. It's not. And then Carol begs to differ with Anderson Cooper. She says, I think most people think of rape as being sexy. And then Anderson Cooper gets, and Donald Trump thinks that like there's a huge conspiracy, but you know, he's a TV guy. He gets the notice of it's time to go to commercial. And he says, okay, let's take a short break. And E. Jean Carroll is still answering. She says, they think of the fantasies. And Cooper says, well, we're going to take a quick break. If you can stick around, we'll talk more on the other side. And then she says, you're fascinating to talk to. They cut to the break, and then they come back. And it's pretty clear that Anderson Cooper has said, okay, well, you know, we got 3 minutes more in this segment. Let's make sure that we cover A, B, and C. Because unlike you and I on the show, where, you know, we can talk in an open-ended way and I can go down as many rabbit trails as you like, when you're on Anderson Cooper for 7 minutes, right? You got to hit absolutely everything. But there you have it. That's what was said. Anderson Cooper said, I think most people think of rape as being violent. And E. Jean Carroll, a survivor, you know my thoughts on E. Jean Carroll. She says, I think you're not, she doesn't quite say respectfully, you're thinking about this like a man. But that's kind of how I read it, you know, and take seriously.
Well, it's obvious to me. She was like, it's like when I, you know, people say, oh, you know, you're a victim of rape. And I say, I prefer to use the word survivor. And here's why I prefer to use the word survivor. Mm-hmm. Anderson Cooper said, you were raped. And she goes, I prefer to use the word that was a fight or an assault because I don't think rape applies because I think too many people like rape these days. So that's where it came from. That's her. That's the context. That's her meaning. And I, you know, I understand it. I understand where she's coming from on that. I have a differing, I call it rape, but yeah. I understood her point. But to conflate it in the way Donald Trump did in the deposition is absolutely incorrect.
And now maybe I should have reiterated the content warning. I definitely want to reiterate it here because I'm going to read the gross things that Donald Trump has said. And I'm not going to even read this part, Jesus, because it's just there's so much layered nonsense on top of garbage. In his Truth Social, he says, I didn't swoon her. And Roberta Kaplan is like, who the fuck talks that way? And the answer is Donald Trump. So, you know, question, what does swooned her mean? And Trump's like, well, I was going to say, you know, after, but I thought it's a nicer word, right? So there you go. Swooned her means, you know, had sexual intercourse, right? Despite the fact that, as Roberta Kaplan points out, I looked up the word swoon in the dictionary, and it means to faint with extreme emotion. That's not what you meant here, is it? And, you know, he's like, and so then Trump's first response is, well, that's sort of what she said I did to her. She fainted with great emotion. She actually indicated that she loved it, okay? She loved it until the commercial break. In fact, I think she said it was sexy, didn't she? Didn't she? She said it was very sexy to be raped. Didn't she say that? And I just read to you what she actually said, which no sane person could interpret what E. Jean Carroll actually said as meaning what Donald Trump said it did here.
Yeah.
And I want to tell you, this is just another kind of shout out to Roberta Kaplan. As a lawyer, when a witness says something preposterously stupid, it does sort of throw you. Right. You're like, wait, did you just say what I think you said? Right. Like, because you're expecting, You plan out your questions. You plan out contingency. Okay, if he says yes, I'm going to do this. If he says no, I'm going to do this. That's how you plan out a deposition of a normal person. You don't expect in the middle they're going to scream like, bananas, right? So good on her. She says, so, sir, I just want to confirm, it's your testimony that E. Jean Carroll said that she loved being sexually assaulted by you. Answer, well, based on her interview with Anderson Cooper, I believe that's what took place. And we can define that. You'll have to show that. I'm sure you're going to show that. But she was interviewed by Anderson Cooper, and I think she said that rape was sexy, which it's not, by the way. But I think she said that rape was sexy, and it was. She actually said things that were very strange. And then she was a different person after the, when he said, we'll take a break right now. We're going to take a break right now. He didn't like what she was saying. He was very upset with. And then she came back. She was a much different woman in the second half, so to speak.
Did he just say, yeah, I raped her, but she thinks that's sexy? That's what it sounds like to me.
It feels like he's teeing that up as an alternative explanation.
Defense,
yes.
Right? Yeah, yeah. Like that's just going to be his thing. Well, if, you know, sure, maybe, who knows what happened, but she says she likes it.
And again, notice... I have flagged for you at the beginning how difficult a witness Donald Trump is. This all of his answers are like this, right? Like, it is just my, there's no, you go back and parse that. There's not a yes, there's not a no, there's not a, there's just a page of word salad. So again, Kaplan comes back and says, so again, just so the testimony is clear, because you tend to give long answers, is it your testimony, sir, that on Anderson Cooper, she being E. Jean Carroll, indicated on the Anderson Cooper show that she loved it? Answer. If you see the front part of her interview, the first part of her interview before Anderson, in a panic because she wasn't saying the right thing for him in CNN, it was very hostile. In a panic, he said, we're going to station break. I think he said it twice. Not the case. he said it once. She kept talking. He said, okay, well, we'll be back after the break. You heard word for word what the transcript was, right? He wanted her to stop. He wanted her to stop talking. If you watch that interview, yeah, she said a lot of things in that interview, things that make her into a total liar. Hmm. Again, we've now taken two cracks at this. Donald Trump has spoken for two pages and has not answered. So Kaplan gives it a third, right? And so the question I'm asking you is, did she say in that interview that she loved being sexually assaulted by you? Answer, well, she said something to that effect. I mean, you'll have to take a look at the interview itself. I believe she said rape was sexy, to which Anderson Cooper is dying. He's saying, let's get to a commercial break immediately. I think you better watch the interview. I'm sure you have, but you better watch the interview. So, effect number four. In the interview, when Ms. Carroll talked about rape being sexy, isn't it true that she said that's a view that that many other people hold? Answer, oh, I don't know. I mean, I don't know. All I know is I believe she said rape is sexy or something to that effect, but you'll have to watch the interview. It's been a while. And again, this is what liars do, right? So swing number five. And just to clarify, I think you said a few minutes earlier that you used the word swooned as a synonym for, you said the F word, for sexual intercourse. Answer, yeah, that's because that's what she said. Question, what do you mean? She never used the word swooned. Answer, no, she said that I did something to her that never took place. There was no anything. I know nothing about this nut job, right? Hmm. And again, that notice how, you know, that's sort of where we're left with, right? In the full colloquy here, right? Five swings, the closest answer, the answer that would allow you at a trial to put up contradictory testimony on the screen, would be, did she say in that interview that she loved being sexually assaulted by you? Answer, well, she said something to that effect, right? So you will be able to, at trial, have the cross-examination of question. And in fact, you believe that Ms. Carroll here loved being sexually assaulted by you. And when he says, I never said that, you'll be able to say, oh, well, do you recall when I deposed you, Mr. Trump? Yes. Let's put up the deposition, let's put up that deposition testimony, and you'll be able to put up those lines there. But notice there's no clear yes, right? There's he implies yes five different times over three pages. He never quite says it. And I don't mean this as criticism. No lawyer on earth could have gotten a clean answer out of
no, him. No, I think his number one rule in depositions is never use the word yes and never use the word no.
Yeah, I think that's right.
That's just what he's been told, and that's just what he does. I have one final question before we get out of here. If the Department of Justice wins their case that, you know, that his what he said while he was president is part of his job, two questions about that. If the DOJ wins certification here, does that set a precedent, A, and or will it be just narrowly for this case, a decision for this case? And B, would that dismiss the entire suit or just the part of it that includes Carol 1?
Let's answer those in reverse order. B, it would only dismiss out Carol 1. Right?
Okay.
The statements on Truth Social are not. So, for example, there is a live question about republication of defamatory statements versus reaffirming those defamatory statements, which the second part very clearly causes the clock for statute of limitations to start running anew, right? It's less clear if, so for example, you know, and these issues have come up in connection with the Alex Jones statements about Sandy Hook. They've come up in connection with the Devin Nunes statements in connection with his alleged farm. And so there's a lot of litigation over, you know, is this, where did this act begin? And the law is super clear that if you talk about in a new way that previous article, right, that's not just, oh, you know, that happened to pop up again through no fault of your own or whatever. That is a new statement, new cause of action, newly defamatory matter that occurred in 2022 when Donald Trump was not president, even though, you know, he might believe that he's still president, and Alina Abba might believe that he's still president. So only would apply, only would dismiss out Carol 1. It was an unbelievably stupid thing for Trump to do. But, you know, par for the course.
Right.
But back to the first part of the question, the certified question, right, as to
the precedent part, yeah.
Yeah, what counts as the job duties of the president? It is difficult for me to imagine a decision that could be narrowly tailored in this circumstance, right? Because ultimately, you have to answer the question of, is answering a question about something that has nothing to do with the office of the presidency during the normal press gaggle, is that part of the president's job or not? And the analogy that I would give is, you know, the Paula Jones and Jones v. Clinton litigation, right? That, like, ultimately, there was no way to answer the question, hey, can you make a sitting president sit for a civil deposition in connection with conduct that occurred before he entered the White House? And ultimately, the Supreme Court was like, yeah, we can do that. It's important not to harass the president. The president's super busy, but it doesn't have an absolute immunity from being a part of the judicial system, the justice system. And so, you know, that ruling, the Jones v. Clinton ruling, has shaped the contours of much of what we've seen in connection with Donald Trump, you know, has sort of set the precedent that notwithstanding the fact that Trump's gaggle of buffoon lawyers argue at every opportunity that he has absolute immunity for being the president, that no, you don't, right? Like, that precedent, that ship sailed a long time ago. So hard to say, speculating on a certified question, but I really think that it's difficult, that it will be difficult to come up with an opinion that only applies to Trump and does not, in fact, sort of describe, you know, when presidents are on the job and when they're not on the job. And that's either way, right? You know, it could come out a sort of you're always on the job. It could come out, no, when you know, take the opportunity to answer personal questions, you're not on the job anymore. I could see both of those happening.
Okay. Interesting. Yeah. Cause I was wondering about that legally. I was like, can you just say that's not part of his job, but only in this particular case, but it would have to apply to other things. And I suppose that those would be litigated after the fact, if, you know, if they needed to be, if a question came up that sort of fell within that decision again. And then, of course, we have to remember that don't those decisions from the D.C. Circuit Court of Appeals only apply to the D.C. Circuit and not other circuits?
Yeah, that's right, although it is very difficult to imagine how a case against
a political
the president,
defamation case, yeah,
would arise and go up, you know, in California or, you know, go up to the
Anywhere
Ninth
else,
Circuit or whatever.
Right.
Yeah. So
cool. All right. Well, thank you very much. That is our show for today. If you have the stomach for it, read those deposition transcripts. If you have the stomach for it, it's dizzying and annoying and hard to follow. And I think that that's by design. From the Trump side.
Yep.
So any final thoughts before we get out of here for the week, other than, boy, it's going to be a busy news week this week.
I think that's right. I sure hope you're a $2 patron and you're going to get our midweek update or end of the week update, because I have a feeling there will be some developments and some threads that we need to pick up on. And those have been a lot of fun. And I can't wait until we get together to do our next one.
Yeah, I do. I love those. The unedited, raw, unscripted, yeah, for patrons. Did we shout out our new patrons on this show today?
We did not. So to close us out, a big thank you to our new patrons. Clytemnestra, Tynerides, Carol Hatem, or Hatem. I like the idea that it's the other one. Suzanne Ashworth, Michael Elliott, Christine Ingleton, Alan Jewell, E. Hodgson, Ginger and Chris, Kareen Vowles, Eat a Bug, Mark Meadows, Jim Butt Trusty, Jennifer Reyna, Debbie Jackson, and AC. Thank you all so much. And again, you want to support the show, head on over to patreon.com/aisle45pod. That's AISLE 45POD. Give us a buck, we'll shout you out. Give us $2, we'll give you a bonus episode every week. Give us more than $2, and we will love you forever and occasionally give you some repeated Hall of Fame shout outs and all kinds of other great stuff. But that's how you keep this show on the air. This is, we greatly appreciate all of our patrons, everybody who helps make this possible.
Yeah, we need you, and thank you for coming through. We'll be back next week. I've been Allison Gill.
I'm Andrew Torres.
And this is Clean Up on Aisle 45. Clean Up on Aisle 45 is written, researched, and produced by Allison Gill and Andrew Torres, with editing by Molly Hockey. Our art and logo designer by Joelle Reeder and Moxie Design Studios, and our music is composed and performed by Adam Orr. Clean Up on Aisle 45 is a proud member of the MSW Media Network, a collection of creator-owned podcasts dedicated to news, politics, and justice. For more information, visit mswmedia.com. MSW Media.
They Might Be Giants have been on the road for too long.
Too long.
And They Might Be Giants aren't even sorry.
Not even sorry.
And audiences like the shows too much.
Too much.
And now They Might Be Giants are playing their breakthrough album, Flood.
All of it.
And they still have time for other songs.
They're fooling around.
Who can stop They Might Be Giants and their liberal rock agenda?
Who?
No one. This ad was paid for with somebody else's money.
NetCredit is here to say yes to a personal loan or line of credit when other lenders say no. Apply in minutes and get a decision as soon as the same day. Loans offered by NetCredit or lending partner banks and serviced by NetCredit. Application subject to review and approval. Learn more at netcredit.com/partner. NetCredit, credit to the people.
If a friend asks how you're doing, and you say,
I'm okay.
When the truth is,
I don't want my problems to burden anyone.
Or you say,
hang in there.
Because
if I ask for help, they'll just think I'm weak.
Then this is your sign to call, text, or chat. 988 for free, confidential support. Anytime. You don't have to hide how you feel.